Tudo bom, Zana? How are you all today? So before we start the sermon, let's take a moment to bring our palms together in veneration. In His holy name, the perfect one, the one who showed us the path to the ultimate liberation, our teacher, our master, the supremely enlightened Lord Buddha. Let us bring our palms together to pay homage to our teacher, the Lord Buddha.
Namo tassa bhagavato arhato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arhato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arhato sammasambuddhassa.
When you think of it, life is a very daunting task, isn't it? Some are promoting suicide. But just think about living. What do you do to live? You do many things, don't you? When you first learned to, who did you first learn to live from? When you were born, first, the first people who taught you to live was your parents. They showed you how to live from the days that you were crawling on the floor, and then you were knee walking, and then you started to stand up, and then they taught you how to stand up from that point, and then from the day that they taught you the words to communicate, from that day onwards until today, people showed you different ways to live. Because we didn't know coming to this world how to live. The only thing that we knew when we came to this world to cry. That's the only thing that we knew at the start. But now, how many things do we know today? How many things do we solve today? How many problems that we go through today? But at the start, it was just one problem that we had when we came to this world. And that was just food, maybe. As a baby, that is the only thing that you asked for. You asked for food. That's why you cried. Then you asked for the warmth of the mother. That is basically like shelter for you when you were little. So then from with the lapse of time, when the time passes, with time, you got to know that there are different things that you would need in life. They're not actually needs. People put different things into your head. Apart from the basic needs, then people around you, again starting from your parents, then your siblings, then your friends, relatives, neighbors, all of them put different views into your head. Different ways to live life, different paths to walk on life. They told you that, put our walk in this direction. Do walk in this direction. You can be someone like this. You can be someone like this. They told you different ways to live life. But then, we bought all of that. Because we didn't know anything. We were just desperate to learn. To learn to do something because we didn't know what to do. But then, if you go back and ask the people who taught you, did they knew what they did, what they told you about, then they would have told you by experience that currently it's okay, But there is no fixed solution to all the problems in life. That is what they would have told you when they told you these directions to walk in life. So you started from one point. This is your birth. And then you learn something. And then from these directions, you learn to go into other many, many other directions. And then this expanded like a tree diagram. It all started from one point. But then it expanded. And today, you have many directions that you have walked on. Sometimes you go in one direction, and then if that doesn't work out, you come back. And then go in another direction. But just think of it, none of these directions have brought you what you were searching for, have they? If they did, then you wouldn't be here. Just think how many things that you did in life. Until today, how many things did you do in life? But none of those things actually fulfilled yourself, satisfied you. None of those things did that. Because all the things that you did was to satisfy yourself. Satisfaction is what you are searching for from the day you were born. Then after that, you are born and you search for satisfaction. Then you search for your mother. Then you search for what's next to satisfy yourself. Then everyone around you taught you different ways to satisfy. But then if you ask them, they were satisfied. That's why they were sharing it with you. But then that's just temporary. They were still searching for satisfaction. That's why when you talk to children, we tell them, Buddha, go and ask your mother today. Amma, are you happy? We tell them this. Amma, are you happy? Go and ask that from your mom. Then she would tell you that, probably she would tell you that, yes, I'm happy today. But then ask them, does that happiness stays with you all the time? Will that stay with you all the time? For that question, then Amma has to say that it doesn't. Because the Putha itself experienced that Amma got angry last week. Maybe for something that the Putha did. Maybe for something that the boy did. So therefore, Amma can't say, the mother can't say that happiness always stays with me. Because it doesn't. It's not like that. Then when this becomes the norm of the society, and when you ask, so what you first do is you live with your parents, and then later, so it is said that, so even Queen Mahamaya, when Prince Siddhartha was about to be born, what did she decide to do? She decided to visit her mother. She decided to travel to visit her mother because it is said that typically in our country, so when you're about to conceive a child, you go to visit your mother to get advice and all of those things from your mother to get to know what are your responsibilities and all of that. It is said that they do that in our country. I don't know about other countries, but they say that they do it in Sri Lanka, typically. So she went to visit her mother to get advice on the way the baby was born, but she was going to visit her mother to get advice because she didn't know what to do after that. Because it's better to ask someone who has experience, right? Rather than just figuring it out yourself, rather than playing it by the ear, it is always better to ask someone who has experience. Therefore, children come up to you, and then you went up to your parents and then asked, Amma, Tata, what should I do next? When you passed your scholarships, you asked that from your parents. What should I do next? Shall I go to a new school or stay in the same school? When you passed your O-levels, you asked that from your parents. What should I do for my A-levels? You asked that from your friends. You asked that from your other people of knowledge. You asked that from other elders that you knew. What should I do for my A-levels? Then after you finished your A-levels, what should I do as my degree? You asked that. Or you searched. You inquired from different people. You asked different people who you think were successful, who you thought were successful. And then they gave you different answers. Do these combinations of subjects and get a pass, and then do this degree. Then you can be like me. They told you different walks of life. They showed you different paths. But then little did we realize that who we are talking to, whether they have achieved the success that they're talking about. They have achieved a level of success. Of course, people achieve great success in this world. But it depends on what you define or how you define success. Success is not defined by the amount of money that you have in the pocket. But that is what people used to define success with. People used to define success with the amount of money you have, how rich you are, how well paid your job, how well do you get paid. That is how people define success. But ultimately, do you want to get paid or do you want to be happy? Exactly. So it comes to that question ultimately. No matter how much money you have, if you don't have happiness with you, then there is a problem with that. Say you earn billions of dollars or you earn a lot of money. But if you don't have happiness, if you don't have the key to happiness, then there is a problem with that. Because you didn't come to this world searching for money. Because back then, at the start, you didn't want money. All you wanted was food. And then there came a point where all you want in life is to walk like others. When you were kneeling down, when you're knee walking, all you wanted was to walk like others. When you're little and you're blabbering around, all you wanted to was talk like others. And that is all you wanted in life. You didn't want money. Just think about when you came close to exams in school, you didn't want money. All you wanted was to pass the exam. So these are different milestones that you have passed in life. When you were at a job opportunity, all you wanted was to get the job, to pass through the interview, to go through the interview, to get the job. That is all you wanted. You didn't want money. But then you'd say that I wanted to pass the job or the job interview so that I can earn money. But at that time, did you want to earn money or pass the job interview? To pass the job interview. So ultimately, all the time you have wanted something that is at the back of your head that you are searching for from the start. From the day that you were born, you are searching for that very thing. That is to satisfy yourself, that is your own happiness. You are searching for your mental relaxation, your mental freedom. You wanted to stay relaxed. That is what you are searching for. Because if you stay like this, silent for a few minutes, can you stay like that? No. You want something in life. You're searching for something. I said, if someone makes a loud noise at the back, you want to look what it is. Why? Because that is, at least that would satisfy me. That is what's running in your heads. Because something would satisfy. Because someone, someday, put a view into the head saying that satisfaction is possible. It is possible, but not when you think that it is possible. Not when you search for satisfaction. If you go after satisfaction, if you go after happiness, if you want to be happy, you can never be happy. If you go after satisfaction, you can never be satisfied. The very reason you're searching for satisfaction itself means that you're not satisfied. I mean, that is why you're searching for it. And as long as you are searching for it, you would not be satisfied. Because satisfaction does not come in searching. Satisfaction is always with you. But that you need to understand. When you understand that satisfaction is always with you, it is always there, it has always been there, then you realize that, I am already satisfied. Then you stop searching for satisfaction. Then you get rid of the need to want satisfaction or the need for satisfaction. That's when you stop searching for satisfaction. That is when we say that you are satisfied. Because then you rest your case. Then you rest your search. Then you rest your voyage that you went through, the odyssey that you went through for satisfaction. Everything that you did for satisfaction, you understand that none of these things will satisfy myself. It's because satisfaction was always there with me. Happiness was always there with you. It is always there. It's already inside your head. It is always there with you. In every experience, happiness comes packaged with it. But we fail to realize that. Therefore, we reject that experience and we search for something. Something that we have in our head as happiness. Because we have been put views that different things in the world can satisfy ourselves. And therefore, we are searching for that specific thing from this world. From every experience, we are searching for a specific experience. That is why we are not satisfied, because we can't accept the current experience. We can't accept what we are going through right now. Because you can't accept that, now we have something that we already want. Because of that, we are not satisfied. That is why Guru Hamdra says, and the Lord Buddha had said, that you need to fulfill, so there's something like that you need to fulfill the 10 perfections to become an Arhat Mahanse. So on your journey to Nibbana, you fulfill the 10 perfections. Why you do that is because the 10 perfections are like attitudes. I think I have explained this to you. The 10 perfections are attitudes that you have in life. So you have the perfection of giving, dana paramita, and then sila paramita, nikkama paramita, kanti paramita, virya paramita, satya paramita, prajna paramita, and then so on and so forth. So you have all these different perfections. So all of these perfections are attitudes, your mental attitudes. That's why when you fulfill your perfections, you become a Arhat Mahanse. Because these are the attitudes that... So this is basically the pratipada that you need to take in order to attain Nibbana. Because you have the Dhamma and you have the pratipada. These are just like your two legs. So you can't just walk with one leg. You can hop with one leg, but you can't walk. How you walk is, you keep your left foot forward and then your right foot forward. And then again the left foot and then again the right foot. So you have to keep these feet one by one, one at a time, forward. Then your whole body will move forward. So your pratipada and your understanding of the Dhamma are these left and right foot. They're your feet. You keep one leg forward and then you keep the other leg. First you need to fulfill Pratipada and then you understand the Dhamma. When you understand the Dhamma, then you fulfill the Pratipada. So they go in hand in hand. So you fulfill one thing, then you have to fulfill the other. You go forward in one and then you have to increase the other. That is how you walk. So that is the way you go towards Nibbana. That is how you do it. Because your Pratipada is as much as important as the Dhamma. Because the knowledge of Dhamma is again a knowledge. When you fulfill that knowledge, so it's like this. When you listen to a sermon, let's say, so let's say we listen to a sermon from Guru Hamra. So he elaborates his understanding, which is at this level. Right? So he speaks to you and then he tries to explain something which he's seeing from this level. So if you take this as a meter, he's at this level and then he explains something. But let's say our understanding is here. So what happens is, when he explains from this level, our base understanding is here. But when we try to understand this and then practice it, what happens is this increases. When this increases, then our understanding increases by a little bit. It doesn't mean that we understand everything that Guru Hamra says in the way he intends it. Because it's not necessarily like that. Because he might intend it differently, but let's say he uses the same words. So that's in his previous sermons, he used Anicca Dukkha Anatta, the same words. But then, in the sermons that he do these days, he again uses Anicca Dukkha Anatta. In the future, he'll keep using Anicca Dukkha Anatta. The words are the same, but his understanding is different. So therefore, when you listen to it, what happens is, your understanding also increases. Therefore, when you listen to the same sermon again, you'd understand a more depth version of it. Because your understanding has actually increased. Therefore, you understand more the second time. You understand more the third time. You understand even more the fourth time. Because just as Guru Hamra's understanding has increased, your understanding has also increased. Therefore, the way you see or way you understand, way you interpret those words, those are the same words. The way you interpret them just changes. Because it is the same words that we have to use to explain the Dhamma. So even if the Buddha explained it, he would have to use the same words. So it is always our understanding that plays a key role. Because one day I explained that it is not my sermon that you're listening to. You have never listened to me. You have never heard me. You have only heard yourself. Even just think about it. When you listen to these words, don't words create inside your head according to what I'm saying. So, let's say, when you're thinking, what do you do? Let's say you want to go to the shop and buy some milk. Then you think to yourself, right? I mean, there are times that you think to yourself. Then when doing, let's say, when planning something out, you think inside your head, right? You think inside your head. But what you actually say that you think inside your head is actually you're making words inside your head, don't you? you think inside your head, let's say, okay, I need to go to the shop and buy some milk. You think it inside your head. Do you get what I'm saying? In the sense that you make words inside your head. You create words. You compose words. And the same thing happens when you're listening to someone. Just as you understand it, just as you hear it, you compose those words inside your head. Don't you? You compose the words that I'm saying. Because you compose them by listening to the Swaminarayanse, which is not actually listening to the Swaminarayanse, with the vibrations that come into your ear and then interpreted by the mind, and then the composition of words happen. That's why words go, that's why we deal with words. Because it is a pattern that the mind puts together and recognizes. That's why when you learn a language, it is very important to pronounce it properly. Because otherwise, different meanings would go into different people's heads. Because it is the pronunciation that makes everything very clear. Because you have to pronounce A as A. Otherwise, you'll give out a different meaning. Because it is the sound that is very important. That is why the language of Pali, it is a sound language. It is verbal. It's not a written language. There are no Pali letters. So it is the sound that makes it, the whole language. The language is made out of the verbal, the sound. So it's very important, because it is that is what you use to communicate. And when you communicate with someone, we are actually making vibrations according to a common pattern that we have agreed upon. So this vibration, if you can vibrate it this way, then you agree to it. That is how you say that you're going to the shop to buy some milk. So we have all agreed in the same pattern. Therefore, we all vibrate our vocal box in the same way. We have learned that pattern. We have learned that vibration pattern. Therefore, we have learned to vibrate our vocal box in the same way. And we have agreed that if you vibrate in this way, this is what it means. And therefore, when you get to hear that vibration, then you compose those words inside your head, inside your mind. The mind composes those words. That's why you understand them as words rather than directly perceiving them. I said sometimes confusions can happen. So the best example is that, so in the morning you observe seal, right? So at the end it says, fulfill heedfully. There's a sentence like that, right? So what does that mean? So appamadena sampadeta is that you abide by the five precepts and then you fulfill heedfully. But when you say heedfully, it sounds very positive, right? Because it's fully, it's full, right? It sounds very positive. But when you take the Sinhalese word for it, it actually has the negative of it. So in the Sinhalese word, it is apramad. So that is the negative version of pramad. But then it sounds positive. So, therefore, heedless and heedful gets switched. Because you sometimes mix them up. Because heedfully itself means apramada in Sinhalese. So when you try to translate the two things together, then sometimes you can get mixed up with them. But then heedless means pramada. But heedless in English, it sounds a bit like negative. So that is what language can confuse. That is just an example where language can confuse you. Because it is not the language that I'm speaking that you understand. It is your own interpretation of, so you compose the words. The composition of words happen inside your mind. Your mind composes those words. That is why you understand them as words. You don't get the direct feeling out of these words. You don't directly perceive a feeling out of these words, but you have to compose them. You compose the words according to the sound vibrations that you get. That is why inside your head, just like you think to yourself, so there's something called thinking to yourself. When you think inside your head, which is you actually make words. So you actually speak inside your head. So that is what you call thinking to yourself, right? You don't speak it out loud, but you think inside your head in the sense that you speak to yourself. You make words inside your head. You do the same thing when you're listening, don't you? That is why you understand words. If you're directly understanding what I'm saying, then you shouldn't actually hear words. You get what I'm saying? So inside your head, so you make words, right? So let's say I say apple. When you hear it as apple. You hear the word in your head, right? That means that the word apple has been composed in your head, because the word apple did not came from myself to you. It didn't come from the Swami Nansi. Because as soon as I say apple, all that went from here is a vibration of particles. Apple did not come. Apple did not go. I didn't throw an apple at you. All that went from here is a vibration. It vibrated the air particles that are in between in this room. Therefore, that vibration goes to your ear, and then that vibration goes to your mind. Therefore, the mind composes words according to that vibration. So you never heard me saying apple. You have heard your own apple. You have heard your own interpretation of apple. You have never heard me speaking. You have never heard anyone else speaking. You have only heard yourself. Because the words themselves that you hear are composed in your mind. Even the words. We feel that someone else is speaking and he's speaking the words out, and we understand those words. No. We don't understand any of those words. It is the words that are made inside our heads. And then the interpretation to those words are also given from our own minds. That's why it's always good to elaborate on something when you're explaining. When you say something, when you say a concept, you'll have to elaborate using different types of examples. Because then you also know the examples, and the Swaminathans also know the examples. Then when the Swaminathans relate it to different examples, according to what you have experienced, you interpret again the words that you compose yourself in the way that you understand them. That is why, no matter how hard Guru Hamdura tries, he can't give his understanding to us. Because when it lives here, it's only vibrations. No matter even the Buddha was there, he can't give his understanding to us. But the only difference between the Buddha is that the Buddha knows exactly what to say. Because he can search your dictionary, your memory, your index, he can search it. And then he can search through it and then see what fits you. What words do I need to trigger, or what words that you need to compose in your head so that you will understand this. The Buddha knows exactly that. Because he can see. He can check your memory. He can check your Namagotha. And then he can see your past lives and what you have done. That's why for different people, the Buddha gives different examples. So there had been a Swami Nahanse who tried himself very hard to practice the path, but then he tried for many years, but then it didn't work out. And then he went to the Lord Buddha, and then when he said this, and the Lord Buddha said, then the Lord Buddha conjured up a golden flower, a golden lotus flower, and then explained Anicca through that, showing that flower. And then the Swami Nahanse became an Arhat Nahanse. Why? Because the Buddha saw that the Swami Nahanse, in his past lives, he'd been a goldsmith. For many lives, he'd been a goldsmith. So that is what he had practiced. So as soon as he saw the golden flower, the golden lotus flower, he knew the things that he, because that is his experience. So that interpretation came into his head. That is why it is said the first quality of the Dhamma. What is it? Svakkato bhagavato dhamma, bhagavata dhammo. The Dhamma is svakkata. Svakkata bhagavata dhammo. The Buddha's Dhamma, it is svakkata. Svakkata in the sense, sva means yourself. So, svakkata means that it is arisen inside you. The Dhamma is svakkata. That is the first thing about the Dhamma. It is svakkata. You interpret it. It is arisen within you. It's not coming from anywhere else. But the magic of it is that you need a Swami Nahanse or someone who has attained at least the stream enterer to trigger that. But then again, he's triggering your own experiences. So therefore, you interpret your own words. The mind interprets its own words. It composes them and interprets them. But then it composes them according to the vibrations. That is there, but the mind composes its own words. So you compose these words right now. The words that you're hearing right now, you compose them right now. It is not the words that the Swami Nahanse composed. It is the word that you composed yourself. It is the words that your mind composed. So therefore, that is how you interpret different stuff. That is how you interpret different things in the world. Because they're always composed inside your head. That is why when I say apple again, you also create that word inside your head. Otherwise, you would need to create it. If you understand directly from the vibrations, and if you perceive directly from it, then you would need to create a word again. As if I say a Sinhalese word, then again you create it inside your head. If I say a word from a different language, then you wouldn't understand it as a word. You think it's a word, but you'd understand it as some sound. So this is what you call Vachi Sankara. So there are three types of Sankara. One is Mano Sankara, which creates the mind, and then Vachi Sankara, which creates words, which composes words, and then Kaya Sankara, which is the bodily actions and which triggers bodily actions, or the messages that are sent to the brain in order for body to function. So these are the three types of Sankara. So this is Vachi Sankara, where you so Vachi Sankara necessarily does not need to speak out, because speaking out, it's controlling your body again. That is a Kaya Sankara. So Vachi Sankara itself is inside you. It is mental. It is just inside your head. It is speaking inside your head. That is vachisankara. So vachisankara also happens when someone else is speaking. Because for you to understand what they're speaking, again, you're composing the words. You're the composer. So if you ever listen to a good song, who's the composer of it? You are the composer. not the famous artist. When you listen to their song, you are the composer of that song. Because he composed for him. But you will compose your own when you're listening to it. So you have never heard his composition. How sad is that? You thought that you listened to the best songs in the world, but unfortunately, you thought that you listened to the best artists, but you have never listened to the best artists, unless the best artist is you. You have never listened to the best singer. Because you have always composed the words by yourself. You have always composed the songs inside your head. You have never listened to the best singer. Unfortunately. Sorry to say this, but you have never. I remember when I was in lay life, my parents, when we used to visit different countries, we used to go to different museums. To see it, or different art galleries and stuff. So we'd go into the Van Gogh art gallery, and also to see the Mona Lisa by Da Vinci. So in all of those things, we see people. So there are benches in front of those art art pieces, right? In front of those portraits, sometimes big portraits, sometimes big landscape art paintings. So there are benches in those museums and those art galleries. So people just sit on those benches and just stare. I never understood why. As a child, I never understood why. Why would they just keep on staring at that picture? So they appreciate art. They appreciate the paintings and the values of it. It's just that they're appreciating their own interpretation of it, aren't they? They just sit on the bench and then look at that portrait or the landscape, and they think what they want about it. Because they are interpreting that art by themselves. They think whatever they want about it. And they just keep staring, maybe for a few hours, because it's like meditation for them. It's very relaxing for them, because they can just think whatever they want, just sitting in front of it. And then that is what they say, that we appreciate art, because he has never appreciated the artist. He has always appreciated his own thinking. They have always appreciated their own thinking in front of that, when sat in front of that image. So therefore, when I was little, I didn't understand why people just sat there the whole day. I mean, for me it looked like very boring. But for them it's not boring, because they're actually going through something inside their head. They're actually interpreting that whole image. Because for me, it was just a painting, just another painting. I didn't know how to interpret it, because I didn't have that knowledge. But they're very experienced, maybe artists, or they know how to appreciate art. I didn't know how to appreciate art back then when I was little. So it was just another portrait with colors for me. So it wasn't a big thing for me. It was nothing to write home about. But for them, it was everything to write home about. They could just look at one picture and then write a whole letter or a whole description about it, because they know how to interpret it, because they have that knowledge. Because they have those views, they interpret that piece of art inside their head. Therefore, they can look at it for the whole day. People go there to relax themselves, to relax their minds. They just sit down in front of a nice piece of art and then they just stare at it for few minutes, for a few hours maybe. They just stare at it because it soothes their mind. They feel relaxed because they think whatever they want, looking at the picture. And they say that after all of that, after if they go through a good experience, if they feel relaxed, then they appreciate the artist. But who's the artist? Themselves. They are the ones who interpreted that. It's not the artist's interpretation. That is why it's always very, that's why those things are very fun for them. Because it, themselves are interpreting them. So therefore, unfortunately, you haven't listened to a good music by a good artist. Although the best artists exist in the world, you can never listen to him. Because you compose your own music. You haven't listened to Mozart. You haven't listened to Beethoven. You have composed it inside your head. All the compositions of Beethoven, you have composed them. And you're listening to it. So all his hard work. Poor man. All his hard work are just in water. So you have never interpreted them. All the time, it is you. Sorry, not you have never interpreted them. You have never understood what he intended. He looked at it and then went, this is the best composition. And then you listened to that, thinking that, okay, this should be a good composition. And then you listened to it. When you listened to it, you felt, if it was good for you, then that is why. Even, let's say, there are some songs that you like and some songs that you don't like. Yes. But if it's not a good song, then would the artist put his money into it? Would the composers put their money into it? Would they invest in the album? So if it's a bad song? No. So it's just bad for you because you composed it. You compose your own music. Composition of music happens inside your own mind. So you have never listened to the best music or the best artist, best composers in this world. It is your own interpretation every time. So the same thing with the Dhamma. Not just music. The same thing with the Dhamma. You have never listened to any of the Swaminathas in the monastery. Sorry. You have never listened to Guru Andhra. Although you sit in his sermon and you try to keep yourself awake and then listen to that sermon, eyes open, eyes wide open, you try to listen to that, try to understand that, but you have never listened to Guru Andhra. See how bad you people are? Guru Hans was doing a sermon for 5 hours. You haven't listened to a single word. I'm going to tell this to Guru Hans when he comes back. Guru Hans puts all of his energy and then seeks for 5 hours to give his understanding to you, but you have never listened to a single word. Disappointing. But then, that is how it is. You can never listen to Guru Andhra. You can never listen to Nayakandhra. You can never listen to any of the Swaminathas because you interpret everything inside your own mind. You compose the words inside your own mind because the composition of words happen inside your mind. That is what you call Vachi Sankara. That's why language can be very confusing. It is. That is why there are communication errors. When you take, let's say, a big organization or a huge event, everywhere what they say is communication is the main fault. It is the main issue. Because when you speak, when someone else is speaking, you don't understand what they're speaking. You're understanding what you want to understand. That is how it is. You can't change it. The only thing that you can do is to acquire more knowledge, to interpret what they're saying. Then when you understand that, then you understand that it's just the mind itself doing all the things. Then you start to understand that you haven't lived with other people in this world. Although we feel that it is myself, my father, my mother, my brother, sister, my uncle, aunt, cousins, nephews, nieces, all these are there, and my relatives are always there with me. You haven't lived with any of those people. The mind has only lived with itself. It is just a mind that is taking place. It is just an event that is being experienced right now according to the causes that created that mind. Sorry. That is the only thing that happens in this world. Another mind experiences it in that way. But for you, it's just the mind. You only know about your mind. You don't know about someone else's minds. But then when this mind experiences this, when it goes through this experience, or when this mind is created, it starts to feel that it is living in a world. Because it gets the feeling that it's a separate entity. When it starts perceiving that itself as a separate entity, then it starts feeling that it is living. Because this feeling of separation, this feeling of an entity, was in this mind as well as the next mind. And then it will be in the coming mind. So it will be in every single mind because of ignorance and attachment. And therefore, the mind feels that it had been living throughout time. Therefore, it creates a big story. Therefore, it creates a world. That is why you still feel that the chairs at the back of this room, when you came in, are still there. Don't check. because when you think of it, then inside your head, they're still there. That is why you feel that your children are still at home. Because when you left home, they were there. So that's why you feel it. Because you feel a whole story rather than a single event taking place. And you're living that story. When you start living it, then that becomes the norm. When everyone's living a story, then that becomes the norm of this world. And therefore, people come up with different problems in life. Why? Now they're living and that is not a problem. Now the problem is how to live. When you're living, when it's the norm, then it doesn't become a problem. Then the problem becomes how to live and how to keep yourself happy. Then that becomes the norm. Everyone's searching for happiness, so I should be also searching for happiness. Because living, it's not a problem. But then to search for happiness, you do all sorts of different things. How many solutions comes to your head in order to satisfy yourself? Many different solutions. Many different solutions are carved in this world. If you ask different people will tell you different ways of life, different ways to satisfy yourself. Different solutions to this question of maybe feeling lonely. Let's say you let go of everything and then start living your life alone, and you start feeling lonely. Because you want to satisfy yourself, because this becomes the norm of living. Living becomes the norm, and living through the existence, in the sense that living through a world that exists, living through a world that is there, and you become the center of the universe, and living through that, living in that universe becomes the norm. And when you are someone else, they also say the same thing. Therefore, you think to yourself that, okay, so this is the norm. Therefore, you start living in that world. When you start living in that world, then comes different problems. To keep yourself happy, you need to do this. To keep yourself happy, you need to do the other thing. To keep yourself happy, you need to do that thing. Therefore, you do different things to try to keep yourself happy. Because when you start living, you can't just live without anything. You need to do something. Because living itself is a daunting task. That's why when you take the life of, let's take a very simple life of, let's say, an animal. Let's say a dog, for example. What does it do? It wakes up in the morning. And then, because he woke up, now he has to do something, right? So he stretches himself and then goes around trying to find food. And then he finds some food to eat. And then what does he do next? He comes back to your pouch and then sleep. That's how he spends his life. And then he wakes up again. Apparently he wakes up. And then because he woke up, oh, I'm still alive. Got to do something. And then he starts searching for food again because this is lunchtime. And then he finds something to eat. And then he just keeps running around. Have you seen stray dogs running around in the streets? So what are they actually doing? What is the purpose of their life? They just live. They just do something because they're living the next day. Because they apparently wake up the next day, they do something. Because they wake up and they're hungry, they do something. Because they have to do something. Otherwise, because they're living. They're doing something because they're living. Because they don't have a clear, definite purpose in their life. They don't have a distinct goal in their life to achieve. Just because they're living, they're doing something to just pass time. Until they find a place to sleep. When they want to sleep. When they want to eat, they just go and eat because they're living. So the first questions that you should ask yourself is that, why do you eat? And you say to live. Why do you drink? You say to live, right? To quench your thirst. Why do you quench your thirst? To live. Why do you get a good rest? Again, to get energized for the next day. Again, to live. Why do you live? What is the purpose of your life? What is the goal of your life? What is worth achieving in this world? Is it actually worth achieving? Earning $1 billion. That could be a milestone. Is it really worth achieving it? Is that what satisfies you? Getting this career, getting a job in this chain. Is it what satisfies you? If it does, then you shouldn't actually get that job. You get what I'm saying? Because if there's a job opportunity, that itself means that whoever is providing that job is not ready to do it. So let's say there's a job opportunity that you need to go for. Let's say it's a barista, or let's say it's an entry-level programmer, or let's say it's something, some job, right? So the very reason that job exists, because it's a job, right? The very reason why that job exists is because the owner of that company, the owner of that organization, is not willing to do it. because he's not willing to do it, he wants to hire someone else to do it. So how come something that doesn't bring him happiness bring you happiness? But then when they put up the flyers on the streets and on the billboards, they say that this is a great job opportunity. Fly to Australia, you would get many job opportunities. Fly to the UK, you get many job opportunities. The very reason a job opportunity exists is because someone else is not willing to do it. Therefore, he wants to hire someone else to do it. Just like the maid, if you have a maid at your house, then why do you have a maid? Because you're not, because maybe you don't have time and you're not willing to do the things that the maid would do. Therefore, you pay someone and then hire him to do something. Because you're not willing to do it. So does happiness come with that? So does happiness come with a job opportunity? So where is this happiness? Where is this thing that you're searching for? If it's in a country, then if it's in a place that you visit, again, you compose that. It is inside your head. You wanted to visit the Dunghindale, and then you want to visit the Dialumale, and then you want to visit some other Alle. So you first saw the Dialumale, and then you want to visit Dunghindale. Where was happiness? In Dialuma or Dunghinda? Which one brought you happiness? Some people go to Dialuma first and then go to Dunghinda. And then you meet people who went to Dialuma. There's a waterfall called Dialuma, right? Yeah. I remember Dunghinda, but I'm not sure about Dialuma. So you meet people on the way who went to Dialuma first and then who are going to visit Dunghinda. And on their way, you meet each other. And then each other say that, visit Dunghinda. You say it, you tell them, visit Dunghinda. It's very marvelous. It's the best place to see. Without seeing that, your eyes are useless. You say this to the people who have visited Dialuma and then coming to visit Dunghinda. Then they ask you, oh, is that so? That's great to hear. Where are you off to? And you say, we are going to visit the Dialuma. Wait, how come? If that's the best thing that you have seen, then why are you going to visit Dialuma? Then you should lose your credibility. And then you ask the same question from them, and then they boast about Dialuma. And then you ask them, where are you off to? Then they tell you that we're off to Dunghinda. Then if all of those things that you said are correct, if Dialuma is the best thing to see, then why are you going to visit Dunghinda? People have different holiday destinations. They go to different countries in search of happiness, of course. They go to Dubai, they go to the UK, they go to New Zealand, the Australia, Switzerland, many other countries, Holland, USA. Why in search for happiness? What about the people in those countries? If you ask them, they come to Sri Lanka. They come to visit this country. And people here go to visit another country. So where is happiness? Is it in Sri Lanka or the Netherlands? Is it in the UK or Australia? Where is happiness? Is it in Japan or New Zealand? Where is it? So which land has happiness? Is it New Zealand? Or Scotland? I've been there. There's no happiness there. Or is it England? Or is it Neverland? That you can never go to because only Peter Pan can go there. So which land has happiness? And when big countries are over, you go to small countries like Maldives or Seychelles. These are like the serene, beautiful countries that you say, which has nice oceans, islands, Fiji. You go to Hawaii. You go to visit these countries. But if you ask a person in those countries, they go to visit other countries. If you ask a person in cold countries, they don't like the cold. They come to visit the hot countries, the warmer countries. When you go to the warmer countries, then they go to visit colder countries. Where is happiness? Is it in a colder country or a warmer country? Is it in the sunbathing or snowbathing? Where is happiness? Is it in the art museum or the natural history museum? Where is happiness? Is it in the circus or in another place? Where is it? This is the same question that people back then came up with. They were very dissatisfied of their lives because they understood that no matter what they do in their lives, they're not reaching this happiness. That is why the Buddha said, Dveme bhikkave anta pabbajite nana sevitabbam. Yo chayam kame sukama sukallikani yogo. Hino gammo potujjaniko. Anariyo anatta sangito. Yo chayam atta kilamatani yogo. Dukho anariyo anatta sangito. And then he went on to explain that etete bhikkave ubo anupagamma majjima patipada. Take the middle path, which is not the middle way. Majjima patipada, it is a medium that you take. So he said, dveme bhikkave anta pabbajiten nasevitabbam. So by monks who are trying to achieve salvation, or anyone who is trying to achieve salvation, they shouldn't stop on these two ends, in the sense that kamesu kamasu kallikani yogo, which is that to trying to satisfy yourself, you shouldn't stop there. That is not what the Buddha had said. And then he goes on to explain, yochayang atta kilamatani yogo. That means trying to be patient and trying to just conceal everything inside you to stop or to experience all suffering once and for all and just finish it. That's not going to work either. Then he showed you a medium which you need to understand, realize and live your life with, which then gets rid of defilements slowly. Which is the only path to salvation. Which is the only path that you will be satisfied. That is understanding that satisfaction is always with you. That is understanding that happiness is always with you. It has always been there with you. That is the middle path. That is the Majjhima Patipada. That is that medium. To understand that happiness is always with you. You don't have to go anywhere searching for it. You don't have to search for happiness in anywhere. You don't have to go to another country in search of happiness. You don't have to go visit a place in search of happiness. Because that's by doing that, you would never get happiness. Because happiness is not there. It's not embedded in packages. It's not embedded in countries. It's not embedded in images. It's not embedded in sounds. It's not embedded in feelings. Happiness is not like that. Happiness is something that is always there with you. Because when you come up with a wanting inside your head, then that itself gets rid of your happiness. Because the very reason you have a wanting means that you need something specific to be happy. That means you're searching for happiness. You can't accept your current experience. You can't accept what is coming or what you're perceiving right now. Because you want something specific to perceive. You're searching for that through your current experience. It's like this. It's like when you're little, typically your mother, you go and ask your mother, let's say there's a little child. He goes and asks the mother, "Mom, can I get a star?" There are lots of stars in the sky. Can I get one? What do you think the mother will say? The mother would say, because she doesn't want to upset the child either. She can't break his heart. Therefore, the mother would probably say, because he doesn't understand that stars are in the sky and all that. So she'd probably say that, okay, Putha, I'll get one tomorrow. And then she goes to work the next day, and then when she comes back from work, then the son comes to her and asks, "Amma, did you bring me the star?" Then again, "No, I forgot about the star. I'll bring you one tomorrow." And the amma has to keep saying this as long as Putha believes that you can get stars. You can have one in your backyard. As long as the Putha believes in that, Amma has to keep on lying. Amma has to maintain it. Amma has to maintain it. So it is said, when you say one lie, you have to say 100 lies to cover it, right? That is maintenance. You have to maintain it. So Amma has to maintain that stars can be achieved. So for example, another example would be Santa. When we were little, we thought that Santa existed and he brought us presents. So whenever you go to the mall, we see Santa there during the winter time, like towards December. We see Santa with a big bag and then wearing the red cloth, his clothes. And then with the beard. And then I would typically go and pull the beard and check whether it's real Santa. And then you take a picture with him and then come back home dissatisfied because this is not the real guy. Because his beard wasn't real. And then still, you would believe that Santa is there, but this is not him. It's someone else. This is someone who's pretending to be your Santa, but Santa is also there. But then there comes a day where you realize that until that day, you'll have to maintain that Santa is always there. Your parents have to maintain that. And they have to bring gifts and put under the Christmas tree and then say that Santa brought it. Because you've been a good boy. You've been a good girl this year, therefore the Santa brought gifts for you. So you'll have to maintain it. Because you have one lie in your head, therefore you'll have to keep on maintaining it. But then there comes a day that you realize that Santa is not a real person. There's no Santa living in the North Pole. Santa is not there. When that comes to your head, when you get to understand that, then you stop maintaining. All the maintenance stops. You become sad, but because Santa has never existed. But then you start feeling about yourself how much a fool you were. Because Santa never existed, but I thought Santa existed. And then I did everything because Santa was looking at me all the time. Santa could be a concept that people brought up to so that the children will be good. The children will behave good. So the children would get the things that they give, right? If they give good, they will get. So that's a good concept. But then if you think that Santa, there is a person like Santa exists in this world, then you're in trouble. You'll have to keep on maintaining it. Just like the mother, who'll have to maintain every day that she forgot to bring the stars. But she'll have to say, she implies by saying that, that bringing stars is possible. Because the very fact she's saying that, when she says that, I forgot today, that means there is a possibility that I can bring. So I can actually bring stars, but I forgot. And therefore the Putta is sad and Amma becomes a bad guy. Because stars can be brought, but Amma's not bringing it. Then the Putta would go after someone else searching for stars. When Amma fails to give it to the Putta. When Amma fails to give it to the boy, then the boy will go after someone else in search of stars. But little did he understand that it is not a problem with the mom. It is a problem with his understanding of stars. But when he grows up, he gets to understand that stars are in the sky, they are celestial bodies, and you can't actually get them, because even if you were to get one, you'll be burnt. Because stars are suns. So therefore, he understands, and then he wouldn't ask his mother for stars. Then the mother wouldn't become the bad guy. But today, just think of it, because you believe in a lie, which is ignorance, which is what you call ignorance. Ignorance is living in a lie. Because of that ignorance, because we're believing in a lie, just think of how many things we'll have to maintain. From our body itself. Because we came to this world because we believed in it. So therefore, we are maintaining our body today. We have to eat today. We have to exercise today. We have to do all the things that we do to the body today. It's because we believed in ignorance. We were ignorant. We believed in a lie. Therefore, just think of how many things we'll have to maintain. So when you lie once, you have to lie 100 times. And so just think about how many things we maintain today, how many problems that we solve today, just because of one single problem that was in our heads, that is in our minds. Just one single problem that is in your minds. Because of that, how many things do you maintain today? You have to maintain your job, you have to maintain your status, you have to maintain your career, you have to maintain your wealth, you have to maintain your house, you have to maintain your children. I mean, it's uncountable. You can make a list of a huge book of the things that you have to maintain. All started with answering just one problem. Failing to answer that problem was the main problem. Failing to see that problem was the main problem. Therefore, all the other different problems arose. Just failing to see one problem that was there. Just failing to understand that there was only one problem to be answered. Because of failing to understand that, many problems arose. Now, people keep on answering these all sorts of different problems, but never do they answer the main problem. Therefore, it's like a tree. So a tree will have a root. And when the tree sprouts out of that root, it will give rise to leaves and fruits and flowers. So this tree will keep on growing. And therefore the leaves would be grown. So the leaves would be grown as well. And therefore, what people do is they just keep cutting the leaves, the branches. Because they'll have to maintain the tree. But all you have to do is just uproot the tree from its roots. To do that, you need to see that the root cause of all these leaves. But as long as you think the root cause is just these leaves keep on growing because of the branches, you cut the branches. But then the branches keep on growing. And then if the branches grow, then the leaves grow. So therefore, that is not an answer. So you need to see the root as the problem. You need the root as the cause for all of these leaves. But typically, when you look at the tree, you would think that it's just the branches. That's why the leaves are there. So when you see that, then people go solving the problem of the branches. They cut the branches. They cut the leaves. They trim the tree. And therefore, they'll still have the tree and the root, but it keeps on growing. It never stops. As the Buddha said, to uproot the tree from its roots, and that's the only way that you can stop the tree from growing. So he said, tanhaya mulam kanata. To uproot the root of tanha, to uproot the root of attachment, that is the only way to get rid of the tree. But otherwise, all of these leaves would keep on growing. There's no other way to stop the leaves from growing. Because the leaves grow because the tree is there. So therefore, people don't feel that it is this layer that they're living on, it is this veil that they have on their eyes is the problem. Because that veil is in everyone's eyes. Let's say when you came to this world, so having a nose in the middle of the face was the normal, right? So you didn't have a problem with that. Let's say when you came to this world, they had the nose somewhere on your head. If that is so, if everyone had that, then that becomes the norm, right? Then it wouldn't be a problem. But if you see someone with the nose on the head today, then you'd call that person as a not normal person. Why? Because how did the other thing become normal? Is it because everyone has it? What if that's the right way? Just because everyone has it does not mean it is the right way, does it? What if some biologist could prove it, tracing back to the old days, to the history, and then what if he could prove it that this is the place the nose should actually be? What if you could prove it? Then all of you will be disappointed, right? Because your nose is in the middle of your face. Because he's the right person. He's the only one who's right. So therefore, so this is just like that. When everyone's doing the same thing, then it becomes the norm. It becomes the norm of the society. So just think about your life as the norm. That is the normal life that everyone spends, right? Going to school and then getting a good education, and then O levels, A levels, degree, job, and marriage, children. Then after that, your later life, and then religion. And then after that, so the religion comes last. Because now you don't have anything else to do. Before religion comes, looking after the kids, so your your grandchildren. That comes before religion. When that's over, then comes religion. This is the same template that everyone walks through. Because this is the norm. It is said that there is a story that goes with one person goes to the god when giving life to the lifespans to the cow, monkey, and the dog. God goes and asks the cow first, or the monkey first. I'm going to give you 40 years to live in life. Are you happy with that? And then the monkey says, oh God, no. I don't want 40 years to live. That is too much. Just give me 20. And then God gives him 20. And then, okay, ships him off. So the monkey got 20 years of life. And then God goes to the dog, or the cow, the bull, and asks the bull, I'm going to give you 40 years of life. Are you happy with it? And then the bull says, 40 years is too much. I can't live that long. That's just too much for me. Just give me 20. And then God gives him 20. And then he ships him off, and then the bull got 20 years of life, of lifespan. And then God goes to the dog and then asks the dog, I'm going to give you 40 years of life. Are you happy with it? And then the dog says, oh God, no. 40 years is too much. I don't want 40. I can't live 40. Just give me 20. And then God agrees and then gives him 20. And then ships him off, and then the dog has 20 years. And then God goes to the human and then tells the human that I'm going to give you 40 years. Are you happy with it? And then the human says, 40? Just 40? Seriously? That's not enough. I need more. And then this raged the God. Therefore the God got angry. And then he says, okay, you're asking the God for something that you haven't given. Therefore, I'm going to give you what exactly you deserve. And then he puts 20 that he got, that was left over from the dog, 20 that was left over from the monkey, 20 that was left over from the bull, and then puts those three together and then gives the man 60 years. That's why the maximum lifespan of a human is 60 years. It has reduced to 60 years now. Back then it was like 120 years. We know that Bakula Maharaja Nansi, he lived for 120 years. But now it has slowly reduced down to 60. It'll keep on reducing down to 10. That's when they say that a great disaster would happen and all of those. But that's why they say that the first 20 years, we live like monkeys, don't we? Searching, curiosity, finding, learning. That's how we spend our first 20 years, don't we? Going to school, uni, and completing degrees. That's how we spend our first 20 years, learning. That's the same thing that monkey does throughout his whole life. He's very curious. He wants to learn. Everything he touches, he just observes. That's the curiosity of a monkey. And then, after 20, then comes the era of the bull. Then you work hard in your life until you become 40. You marry, and then after your marriage, you work for your other half, and then you do all the chores at house or at home, and you put your life into that, and you work very hard until you become 40 years. And in the last 20 years, we spent like a dog. Protecting all the assets and the wealth that you have accumulated throughout your all 40 years for the next 20 years. Isn't this true, ladies and gentlemen? The first 20 years was spent like a monkey. The other 20 years was spent like a cow or a bull. The other 20 years, the final 20 years, would be spent like a dog, protecting. Learn, acquire, and then second came work hard, and then fourth came protect. Isn't that how the life goes for everyone in this world? That is the story of life for many people. And then at the end, towards the end, because now you feel, you get scared, because now you haven't done anything to yourself. You have served the society, you have done great to this world. You have done many things to this world. You have given, donated, and you have done lots of good things. But what have you done to yourself? That comes into your head towards the end of your life. Then you remember the temple. Handru is there. Swaminanda is there. Then you come to the temple seeking refuge. Now that's after looking after your grandchildren. And you come to the temple seeking refuge. That's when you remember the Noble Triple Gem. That is what has happened to today's society. Sorry to say this, but that is what has happened to today's society. That has become the norm. But back then, during our Sihela people's time, Swaminhanses, or the association of the Mahasangha, was always in the lives of people. That's why even before Aurudu, there's something called the Nonagate. Because during that time, what they did was not doing nothing. Because now it has become like doing nothing. Nonagate, it's just nothing's there, and therefore you should do nothing at that time. It's not that. But Nonagateya is also named as Punyakale. Why that is named like that is because that is the time people used to do lots of merits in hope for the new year. Because they did a lot of merits during that time. They went to the temple, offered flowers, worshipped the Buddha, the Mahasangha, spoke with monks, discussed the Dhamma. They did lots of meritorious deeds. They discussed the Dhamma among themselves, and they did lots of meritorious deeds. They meditated and all those things. They engaged in lots of meritorious activities. Just think of it. Before the new year, they are filling up their karma record book. They are filling all the good deeds. Therefore, they will come into fruition in the next year. That is what they used to do. But today, it is being interpreted as that it's a time that you have to do nothing. So children play games, and the elderly will talk with others, and just spend their day. Because they missed the Punyakale. They got the Nonagate part, but not the Punyakale part. The Punyakale is a time that you have to do lots of merits. Because then it will become a blessing for your new year. Doing merits in the previous year. Because ultimately, when you take that, there is no new year or no old year. It's just another day. But that other day, it becomes very significant, because when lots of people are doing merits at the same time, then it becomes very powerful. That's why those days are very significant. And so recently we had the World Meditation Day. That is why it is very significant. Because many people in the world, when there is a day like that, they come together to meditate. Then that energy is released to this world, this universe. And therefore it's very powerful. That is why on the New Year's Day, we resolve ourselves to the Lord Buddha. We say that, we are a son of the Lord Buddha. We are a disciple of the Lord Buddha. We make a firm resolve saying that out to this world. Because it is a day, it is a time where many people make resolves. Many people make huge determinations to stick onto their goals. So we also make a determination, we also resolve ourselves to stick on to our goal, which is attaining Nibbana, which is becoming a disciple of the Buddha, which is becoming a true son of the Buddha. So therefore, always focus on the problems in life in the way that you should focus on the real problem. In the way that you should see it through the Dhamma. Because otherwise, we would keep satisfying ourselves whenever we are in face of adversity. Because just think about it. Let's say someone yells at us, or someone blames us, someone scolds us, or something that disgusting comes to our experience. Something that we don't like. This is why things that we don't like exist. It's because we have told the wrong thing to our heads. We are ignorant in the sense that because ignorance is there, it is a lie. Therefore, we'll have to keep on maintaining that lie because we are not ready to accept our experience. Current experience is not accepted because something else, something specific, is wanting or it is there to be experienced. Therefore, the mind wants to experience a specific experience, but therefore it's not willing to accept the current experience. That is why something becomes disgusting, because the mind is not willing to accept it, because it needs something specific at that time. That is why when someone's yelling or having a massive go at you, you can't bear it. You can't just keep on listening to it. Because the mind wants a specific experience at that time, but this is not that experience. Because the mind is holding on to that. And therefore, the mind goes to a state of grief. Because the mind wants something else other than this. It wants to experience something else. Therefore, it falls into a state of grief. But if it understands that it is this wanting to hear something else is the problem, then it let goes of the view that it's holding on to have that wanting. Because only when it sees that wanting as a problem, then it lets go of wanting. That's why the Buddhist philosophy is not about letting go of the things that you have. It's letting go of the views that you have. You can keep the things that you have with you. You don't need to let go of those. Now people get scared when they hear that Buddhism is letting Buddhism, when you listen to Buddhism, you'll have to let go. No. You don't have to let go of anything. You just have to let go of the views. And that will happen. You don't have to just get rid of the views that you have. Letting go of views will happen when you understand. First comes understanding, then comes letting go. So letting go will let letting go happen. First, let go of letting go. Don't hold on to letting go. First, let go of letting go, and then let letting go happen. It's like a tongue twister. First, let go of letting go and let letting go happen. Then the more you listen to Dhamma, the more you understand Dhamma, letting go will happen. Letting go of your views. Because it is the views that you hold on to which creates the wanting. And ultimately, although we talk about different views, so those views come into play when you have one single view that this world can be separated. Entities exist in this world. Existence is possible. Upon that view, you have all the other views. Because all the views that you are holding on to today, this is good, this is bad, and the other thing is good, this sound is good, this is the best place to visit, this is the best place not to go, and don't go this place, go visit this country. All of those views are all about entities. So when you understand existence of entities are not possible, then you don't have to say again that this is not an entity. Therefore, don't hold on to it. You don't have to say that again because you have understood the core of it. You have gotten rid of the tree from its roots. Because that is what you're searching for. That is what you're searching for, satisfaction, in the sense that you're searching for separation. You're searching for an entity. You're searching for something special. Because that is what satisfies you. Something special. That's why when you hear a noise at the back, you want to look at it because it's special. At least that would satisfy me. At least that would be separated. At least that will be an entity. That is special. So therefore, always keep that in your mind. And focus on your salvation. Always when you come across a problem, always focus that into your wanting. And understand that satisfaction cannot be gained from the outside world. It can never be obtained by the outside world. It can never be gained from going to other places. It can never be gained from somewhere else, because satisfaction is always within yourself. Just like the words, you compose them. Therefore, your artist is inside you. You have never seen another artist's picture. You can never appreciate someone else's art, because you can only appreciate your own art. You compose it in your head. You compose it in your mind. Okay, so keep that in mind. And we'll conclude the sermon for today by transferring the merits. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits we have acquired throughout the day. By making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, observing the precepts and engaging in various meritorious deeds throughout the day, first and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be recipients of the Lord Buddha's teachings, and with immense gratitude let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Lord Buddha and have passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage, as in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in our local temples and nunneries who have always been by our side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our teacher, Guru Swami Nahansi, and all the other monks resident at this monastery, as well as the Anagarikas and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who take great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Lord Buddha, be that by sharing this sermon with others or inviting others to join them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devotees, friends of the monastery, for the sake of merits, continue to sustain Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery and to those of you who have provided the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, and to those of you who have provided their know-how and extended their well-wishes. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our mothers, fathers, brothers and sisters, our uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, and to anyone and everyone who has helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form. May by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments, overcome any obstacles to our spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the devas, brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the sambhu sasane. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our guardian deities who keep watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May by the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all who have been our friends, families and acquaintances in this infinite long journey of samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits to them. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all who lost their lives in war be their friend of all. Rejoice in the merits you have acquired throughout the day. Let's also take a moment to transfer these merits to all the people who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this infinite long journey of samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer these merits to them. May by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plains. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all make a resolve that may by the power and blessings of all the merits you have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arhants on this blessed land. And may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day and throughout our whole samsara, may you and I, and everyone who has helped make these programs a success, become an arhat unhanse, oran arhant meaning unhanse, in this very life, and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Now the Mahasangha will transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen midetnva Dvesha ginnen midetnva Moha ginnen midetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnayo Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivansapa labeva Nivansapa labeva Nivansapa labeva Tunruvange Suvisyananta Mahaguna Bilen Siyaru Loka Siyaru Satyo Nibbana Parama Sukhen Sukhita Taravetva Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.